As we'll start with, are there any announcements? Anything going on that people want to describe to everybody? I do want to point out that we had it was somebody from Germany, a teacher from Germany, who joined the listserv last week. She had asked me if it was all right if she posted to the Climate Literacy Network, that she had posed her question, which had to do around engaging disinterested students in learning about climate change. She had posted this question on her Facebook page and didn't get too much response, and so I said, sure, go ahead. And after 2 days, she said, should I take this conversation offline? Because it's just so much. And I said, nope, I think everybody is enjoying and reading it all. So I thought that was really great. I think that's our first real international active conversation.
It was very helpful, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really fun to follow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm new to the listserv, and I found the conversation really interesting, and I found myself spending more time reading through what's posted just because of it.
Yes. I know that you can get caught into that loop. One of the things, there's a couple of things you can do. You can request that you get a digest so that, like, once a day you get sort of the whole thing at once rather than one email after another. Also, I've made sure that there are a couple places on the website where you can link to the archive, and so you can then go to the thread and just sort of see all the emails right there. So that's another avenue that you can sort of try to manage your time in terms of reading through everything. If there are no other announcements, there's a couple of things that I just want to revisit from last week. I think I might have been Kristen, but I'm not exactly sure. Last week, somebody asked about having access to contact information from the members of the Climate Literacy Network. And I've been kind of thinking about that. Frank had suggested potentially using LinkedIn, but that's a whole other venue that a lot of people don't go to. So I wanted to sort of get feedback on an idea that I've had for this. I have been maintaining, as much as possible, a contact list for everybody we add to the listserv. So when we get the emails and they ask to be added to the listserv, we also have a separate contact list that I've been maintaining here at Turk. Actually, Sarah Hill has been helping me maintain here at Turk. What we could do is put that on a Google spreadsheet and only provide access to those who are members. I hesitate to either. We originally, and I think somebody did mention that early on, we did have a contact list of everybody who was on the Climate Literacy Network listserv posted on the website live. And, at the time, there was probably about 30 people, and so it was kind of manageable. And now there are about 360 people. And some people might not want their contact information posted publicly. And so what I thought we would do is put together a Google spreadsheet, give everybody who is interested viewing access, with only a few of us having actual editing access so people can't mess things up by accident. And what I'll probably send an email to the listserv inviting people to ask to have that link to that list, but I'm not going to sit down and invite everybody to be able to view that list. So at first it'll be a smaller group of people that have access to it, and for anybody who's part of the listserv, we can certainly give them access to it, but I'm just not going to do that in a time-consuming way up front. So I don't know, what is people's take on this?
This is Karen. I'm the one that asked about it, and I think that sounds good, Tamara.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd agree.
All right, great.
So this is Lila, and I'm just worried that it's still online, still public, and it's still can
be found.
It won't
be public. What we'll do is it won't be public. So I don't know if you're familiar with the URL for Google, but it's really long. and random letters, doesn't spell anything. But in addition to which, what I'll do is I'll send an email out to the listserv, and anybody who responds that yes, they want the link, I will explicitly invite them. So it won't be open to the public.
Right.
Only if I've provided that link to them will they be able to see it. And not only that, if you were to share it with somebody else, they could not get in unless they also had asked me to be on the listserv and to invite them to be able to view it.
Right.
So it's not just open to the public. I wouldn't do that. I mean, for the same reason, I wouldn't post it on the live site.
Right.
Does that address your concerns?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the other
What would it be used for?
So let's say, for example, that Kristen has a question that has to do with the Marsalis shell, which she knows Don Dugenhoff has a lot of knowledge about. Then she could go into that and just get his email address and have a conversation with him. I mean, you know, she'd have to make the decision, is this something I only want to talk to Don about, or is it a question that input from the broader climate literacy network would be available?
Okay.
So
that
there are
sense.
Times when people...
Yeah.
What?
That makes more sense to me. Then, yes, I think that's a good idea.
Okay. So, and there's other times when I'm putting it together, when a smaller group of us is putting together a session for GSA or AGU, and it's easier to go and look up somebody's email address, and because I have access to the management of the listserv, I can go in and find people's names and get their email address, but the rest of you can't do that. So this just gives you an avenue that you could actually communicate with one or a smaller group of people from the Climate Literacy Network that's appropriate to not send something to the entire listserv. The one potential problem with this, because I've run into this before, is that I would invite everybody with their preferred email address, but sometimes that doesn't give you access. And in the past, the only way I've managed to get around this, no matter how hard we've tried, is that the person has to then get a Gmail account. It's free, doesn't cost anything, and you don't have to use it for anything else but to log in to be able to gain access to this. But I have had in the past people refusing to get that Gmail account. But given all the other options are much more complicated and could have other ramifications, I'm more inclined to do this. But I just wanted to make sure that there's that one caveat out there.
Hi, this is David Lustig from UMass Lowell.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question comment about the emails. If there is a desire to get in touch with somebody who is sharing on the listserv, their contact information is available. I don't quite understand why you would need to have a separate database of registered users. So if you want to get in touch with Don, his posting has his email address. So I can contact...
Yeah, but sometimes some people's email addresses don't actually say their name, so that people would have trouble finding it.
Would you also include on this document sort of areas of expertise or interest? So
we could provide those columns and add that if people are interested. It will have your affiliation and your mailing contact information. We have been maintaining a list. It's not we're not going to be starting from scratch here. We do have a spreadsheet with all the contact information, not with the areas of expertise. We can certainly add that, but again, I don't want to give everybody editing access to this because it could be messed up really quick. But we can certainly add that, and we can request that as we move forward in terms of adding new people. I mean, it was suggested last week by Frank that we use LinkedIn, but I am concerned about using one of the social media venues where we already have an active listserv, which I've heard from people, although they even don't really have time to call into this teleconference weekly or even occasionally, they do read and value the the listserv conversations. And to move that to another venue where people might not go seems to me to that detriment. And our conversation with Maika from Germany last week is a perfect example of that.
And Tamara, just for clarification, what you're saying about the Gmail account is you have to get one, but you don't have to necessarily actively use it.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
It just it basically what it means is that I would invite you with that account, with that email address, and then when you log in to Gmail, you'd log in with that email address, and then you would be able to get into the. That's it. You wouldn't have to use it as an email address at all. Just it would be basically your login into Google.
So you'd need to know it.
You'd need to know it, but I wouldn't send you an email on it.
Yep.
In fact,
okay.
We don't even have to include the Gmail address in the contact information. We would just include the email address you want people to use.
Good. Yep.
Yeah. Good.
Okay. So we will move forward with that. Sarah Hill is back from her 2-week trip, so we'll have her upload that, and then. I will, so for those of you who don't remember, way back when at the start of this, we put together the listserv, and it wasn't until we had about 100 people that we started collecting the contact information. And we did send an email out requesting people to provide that contact information who are already members, and only some of them did. So there's going to be a number of people there who don't have much contact information, but maybe we can fill that out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we'll move ahead on that. Okay, and then the other issue that people talked about is setting up these panel discussions which explore issues in intersections of different areas or other kinds of topics. And the particular one that was brought up was the intersection of formal and informal education. And so I put that there was, let's see, there were, just a second, I think that there were 5 people who responded to my email asking about this. And those were Gary Brash, Don Dugenhaus, Louise Hoffman, Kristen Poppleton, and Candace Lustau-Zilling. And
me.
What?
And me.
And who is that?
David Lustig.
Oh, David Lustig, okay. All right, let me add you to this list here. I must have missed your email. Okay. David Lustig. Okay. So what I was going to suggest is that we talk a little bit about what this venue might look like and try to sort of set up this initial one using the people that were interested. Some of them had more specific comments around it. And others just express some interest. So what I was thinking is that it was also suggested that we might make these a little bit longer than an hour, but I don't know how that works for people. But I kind of thought that maybe we would identify, for now it will be this topic, the intersection of informal and formal education, but to formulate a specific question and possibly have 3 to 4 panelists, I think at the most, give a brief presentation, maybe 2 or 3 slides each, that how their work addresses this particular question. Not just a general concept, because I think that the conversation would get too wide-ranging, but maybe a specific question or issue that we could potentially narrow down or identify the 3 people who are 4 people on the panel and have them define the question. And then have the panel discussion where each presents for 3 to 4 slides, 10 minutes max, followed by a facilitated discussion around that topic. So that's sort of my thoughts on how this might play out, where we could then, again, post the slides like we do now on the website, but there would be 4 things, 3 or 4 things to download instead of 1. Anyway, other thoughts about this?
sounds basically sensible to me.
Yep.
It might be an interesting idea to solicit questions prior to the panel from people who were planning to attend, so we get so that there's a sense of what questions are on the minds of people.
That might help set up the question to frame the panel too,
mm-hmm.
and who might be best to participate.
Okay, so yeah, so there's two potential avenues here. One is to solicit questions from the larger group first, and then synthesize it into a question or two that a panel would address. The other avenue is to identify people who are interested in participating in such a discussion and have them identify the question, or once they're identified, have them ask the broader community what questions they might have. So I guess the question right now is, I think we want to pursue this, and a number of you who expressed interest are on the phone, so I guess the easiest way is to identify first who would be interested in actually participating as a presenter in this first panel, which we haven't defined when it's going to be yet.
Yeah, I guess it would depend on the question.
Okay, so say your names.
Don Guggenhaus.
Don, okay.
David.
David. Lustig.
This
okay.
is Kristen, and it would depend on the question.
Oh, Kristen? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can help define the question. What I'm going to suggest here is that we work with the three of you now to sort of explore what question we might address.
I know,
and then,
is Louise on? Louise had some good input early on.
Right, and I can pull up. I do have the document. What I did is I took everybody's comments and I put together in one document that wasn't formatted, so I can read what Louise said. Let's see. Okay, so it says, interesting, a couple of my sessions at this IPY meeting she went to cross over the intersection you're suggesting, I mentored an hour session with APEX, that's the Young Professionals in Polar Research, on informal climate science education and discuss the difference between formal and informal ed. It was quite interesting. I also presented in an educator's workshop. Our materials were originally designed for informal ed, 4-H specifically, but have been well received by formal educators as well. So that's really her context, how they implemented them across these different groups and what they've learned.
Yeah, and I wonder if maybe a starting point is for each presenter to tell a little bit of the story of what they're up to. So, as
okay.
I mentioned last week, what we're doing, well, one of the things that we're doing, we actually have a number of projects that involve both informal and formal educators working together, but probably the one that does that is a most explicit goal is our Marcellus Educator Professional Development, where we're working with educators across right now two communities, Elmira and Binghamton area in New York, on energy literacy and sort of using the Marcellus Shale as a gateway drug for energy literacy. And we've got museum folks and nature center and university and K-12 teachers and K-12 teachers from multiple disciplines all working together to sort of figure out how to build energy literacy within their communities. We are,
mm-hmm.
It's a 2-year project, and you know, it's I don't know how far we'll get by the end of the project, but we have an interesting collaborative that at least people seem to be enjoying and producing things from.
Okay, so could potentially one avenue that you could address is how you facilitate that interaction between informal mm-hmm. and informal and formal educators?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'll also note it's worth noting that it's the most fun Marcel's work we do, because it's working with people who want to deepen their understanding rather than fortify their position.
Mm-hmm. Good. All right, so David, you want to talk a little bit about your effort?
Well, I'm very much interested in the general public's understanding of climate change, and in particular, how formal science teachers can appreciate the impact of informal science learning on their students prior to their coming into the classroom. I don't think teachers have a real appreciation for what students know or may not know from their informal science learnings before they ever got into the formal science classroom learning situation. And so I'm interested in exploring that and helping formal educators appreciate the effectiveness and power of these informal learning opportunities when it comes to climate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this has a somewhat different spin than Don's does. So so it's really exploring how informal science knowledge climate change knowledge gained through informal avenues can be leveraged in the formal classroom.
That's right. Yes, that's what well said.
Okay. So, Kristen.
I think there's a number of things I guess I could talk about, but our biggest piece is that our institute we offer every summer is always a really big mix of informal and formal, mostly Nature Center folks and then teachers in the classroom. So thinking about providing professional development to educators that are both in formal and informal settings, I guess, is one big piece
mm-hmm.
of what I think about and what we work on. And that usually includes a particular curriculum that we've written. Our most recent one has definitely been much more useful and received in the informal setting. So
mm-hmm.
ways of using that and ways of thinking about how the two can learn from each other in that setting and how we can deliver something that's useful to both of them.
So do the formal educators come away with things that they might use with their students, or just a greater knowledge themselves and an ability to understand what their students might know or from other kinds of venues?
From the institute?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So do the formal educators come away with something that's useful, is what you're asking?
Well, what I meant was I'm assuming that they come away with something that's useful to them personally. The question was whether or not they come away with something that they, it sounds to me like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that they come away from the institute, the materials might be used in informal contexts, but do formal educators come away with something that they can also use in the classroom?
Oh, yes, most definitely. I mean, it's generally more heavily a formal educator mix than the informal. But thinking about, you know, a big thing, there's definitely something they both can learn from each other, but there's also a lot of, a lot of informal educators now are also very aware of the standards so that their programming is applicable for, you know, teachers that want to bring them during the school day to their programming. So thinking about
mm-hmm.
those pieces as well, but also just how do you deliver something that's useful for both informal
mm-hmm.
and formal. So that's something we think about every summer as we're planning. And actually, a lot of the workshops I do are for this weekend. We have a little a newly developing network here, the Minnesota Phenology Network, which is just had their third conference this year, and I did a little workshop with a nice group of the formal and informal this weekend. So thinking about, you know, phenology as sort of this meeting point for both the informal and formal, I think is useful in climate change ed too.
Okay, so it seems like a potential theme from these, and we can talk to Louise also, is this: how do you facilitate that interaction so that both the formal and the informal educators get useful benefit both with their own knowledge, but in their ability to teach in the venues that they do teach from that interaction?
Yeah.
I didn't state it very well right there, but that's kind of the theme that I'm kind of hearing here.
Can I ask the question?
Sure.
We're talking about this, and I'm drawn to the audience of people who are on the listserv. And granted, I have only been a part of the listserv for a couple of months. But what I tend to see, and please tell me if I'm wrong, but is that we are. I don't see a lot of formal science educators, but I see a lot of science education researchers, and I see a lot of climate researchers and a lot of climate policy think tank kind of people. Would that be accurate?
I think that's accurate amongst the regular,
right?
The people who are vocal.
And my feeling is that those who would participate in such a panel conference call opportunity would be the regular folks from the listserv. So if we don't have a lot of classroom science teachers or formal science educators. The real question is, who would the audience primarily be, do you think? And that's who we should
A lot of the people on the call work with teachers. They develop professional development programs. So
right.
You'll be taught, that's what the rest of my projects are. So we work with teachers. Teachers aren't actually on the phone, but you'll be talking to those of us that are involved with facilitating these kinds of conversations between different kinds of audiences. So
okay.
That's where the value is.
Gotcha. No, that's very helpful. Thanks.
This is Rochelle. I guess I'm struggling here a little bit because as an informal education institute, I'm trying to figure out how we really fit into this mix. From my point of view, I really want to figure out how we can do a better job in terms of working with formal education institutions. We're doing much more. We've always been curriculum-based. We're doing much more so in relationship to our local educators. Recently, Maryland has required that environmental literacy become part of the program for educational institutions, so they're looking for a way to partner with informal groups like ourselves. I'm trying to figure out how to do that in the best possible way, and I don't know how that fits into this conversation, but any help that a panel could give us in doing this would be greatly appreciated.
Well, my sense is that this is just going to be one panel discussion for 1 hour, and so we could it could be that the topic that you're addressing, which it sounds to me like is how to most effectively engage across institutions in formal and informal education, where the conversation up to now has been how do we facilitate that interaction to the benefit of teachers and the informal educators on the ground. It could potentially be integrated into the same conversation depending on how the panel plays out, or we could do an additional panel that can address those kind of partnerships more explicitly.
That would certainly be helpful to me. I don't know if other people would have the same response. I don't know how many informal educators are on the listserv, but it would certainly be
there's plenty. There, in fact, there's a and you may be involved in one of the CSEPs that involve informal audiences and informal institutions. And so the conversation can certainly happen. One of the things you could do, if you have that kind of a question and want to just explore what the feedback would be, send the question out to the listserv.
Sure.
And you'll see what comes back. And then and it may be that at that point you identify who might be on a panel to have a more full live discussion.
Super.
Okay, so it sounds like we do have a, and so we're going to consider this a pilot in how to run one of these. So, but it seems that we have a group now of three and potentially four people that might put together a question. What we can do is we can, I can send out an email describing what we've discussed here and suggesting that people provide potential framing questions, and then maybe by, I'm just suggesting a timeline here, by next week getting that feedback, and then the three or four panelists could then sort of narrow it down to how they might address this, and then possibly on the following week, the 15th of May, actually have this panel discussion.
I think the 15th of May, I'm actually doing a Marcella Shale workshop. Let me look at my calendar.
And I'm in Atlanta.
Okay, so that won't work.
Emma, we have a tentative booking for Steve Snyder, I think, for May 15th.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what about, do you think that this is something we can pull off by, next week?
The following week works. And
okay.
15th is pretty much my only bad Tuesday in May.
Okay. All right. Do the rest of you, David and Kristen, think that you could pull this together by next week?
You'd rather do this earlier rather than later?
I guess it's for my own interest because I'm not going to be able to be on the call on either the 22nd or the 29th. I'm actually going to take a vacation for a change.
Yeah.
Oh my god!
How dare you?
I'm fine for next week.
So we're talking 2 to 3 slides.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Talking 5 minutes maybe or something.
Yeah, 5 to 10 minutes at the most. What I can do is I can immediately after our call I can put an email out to the listserv and solicit input by Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So that you guys can start thinking about what you'd like to do, but then you might get a little bit broader input, so we can sort of test this all out. And the other reason that I'm kind of more inclined to do this sooner rather than later is because we traditionally while we still continue to have the teleconferences during the summer, because so few people can attend, because so many people are traveling, we tend not to schedule presentations.
Right.
In June, July, and August, and we've occasionally bled into June a bit. But the participation, while we always have a telecon, and sometimes there's only 3 or 4 people on it, but they have a nice conversation, and it might be short. So there's always a venue to have a conversation, but we just don't get a big audience for presentations because of the summer. So if we don't do it now, the default, normal default, would be not to do it until September.
Yeah.
And I would prefer to sort of get this going so that we can sort of think about it, how it went, and then maybe put together a few panels starting in the fall around different topics so we can sort of address the broader spectrum of what people would like to address and then try to identify panelists. And then we have the length of the summer to identify those people and get people engaged. So that's my default for why doing it now rather than putting it off.
Works for me.
So can we, did we get a question out of that discussion? Like a clear...
Yeah, what I'll do is I'll frame it in the email a little bit better. I don't know if I'm going to say it real well, but the issue is to address the question of how do you most effectively get informal science and formal science educators interacting to the benefit of both?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Direct.
How do you facilitate, or how do you get it?
How do you facilitate? What are the outcomes? So if you have an avenue where you have both formal and informal educators come together, do they come away with, and each case could be different, so not everybody has to have all of these attributes, but is it really a brainstorming about putting together materials that are effective for students in an informal community, and the formal educators get to increase their own content knowledge and get a better idea of what's out there in the informal community, or are materials developed such that they can be used both in a classroom setting and an informal setting, or is it a program that actually actively integrates the use of informal settings and venues in the formal education curriculum? So these are all different kinds of avenues. Like I said, I'm just sort of drawing these out of the air.
Yeah.
But use the context of what you've done and sort of think about how you've best facilitated that. So with the idea being to not only say this is what worked, but these were the challenges, and potentially there could be a conversation where other panelists or other people on the call could help you address those challenges.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay, so Scott, the schedule is open for next week?
Yes, as far as I know.
Okay. And if there is something scheduled for the 15th, we should get that on the listserv. I didn't,
yeah.
The website, because I didn't see it there.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll make sure it's up there. I think Steve agreed to the 15th.
Okay, very good.
Tamara, I have a question. I'm just curious whether people have heard anything about the Next Generation Science Standards. I understood they were going to be released by the end of April. It's May.
Yeah, that was the goal.
I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. The last thing that I was in on was the beginning of April, and they said they were hoping for a release in late April, and to give members of the state review teams the public draft a week before it goes public.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't gotten those yet, so it'll be at least a week.
And the other thing that I can tell you is the state science supervisors spent last weekend on many hours of volunteer time, creating everything from press releases that are being shared among all states to documents to help them roll out the next generation standards in their own states. And that conversation with the state science supervisors has indicated that they are going to be out at any moment.
Okay.
Yeah, well, it should be very soon.
Other than its intrinsic interest, is that I'm sure we're going to want to schedule some sessions to talk about that as a group. So,
yeah.
Right.
Good point.
Yeah,
that's a good thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, last time when the frameworks came out, we did actually have a two-hour telecom where we addressed that and provided feedback. So that would be – Don, do you know how long of a comment period is going to be?
It's going to be short. I don't remember,
yeah.
But it's on the order of a few weeks.
Yeah.
That's my sense.
Okay. I mean, last time it was 3 weeks, and so, I mean,
yeah,
that
I think
really...
it's going to be something like that again, yeah.
And it was in July, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So it was a challenge for everybody to even think about it with vacations and things, but we will accommodate whatever schedule it comes out to be.
Right. I mean, I think we would all agree that we should have that discussion. And I mean, I would even suggest that if we can't accommodate it on a Tuesday, that we try to find some other time. So at least we do that live conversation before.
We would definitely do that.
Well, do we want to say that the panel that we've just been talking about would get bumped if they come out before then?
It's only
so
next week. No, it won't be out by then.
Yeah.
In the next week.
Yeah, I think it's, it would be, maybe the 22nd or the 29th. I think if we book something, I would really like to keep that commitment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Are there any other issues or comments that people would like to make?
I would just like to thank you for doing such a great job with this with Listserv.
Oh well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to help facilitate such an active and committed group.
Well, I think it reflects the need for such lines of communication in our community.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. I do appreciate it. Okay, so we will
have a good vacation, Tamara.
Yes.
Okay, well, I will be on the call the next couple of weeks. we are having a clean review camp next week on Monday and Tuesday, but it's going to end at 12:30 on Tuesday, and so I will be on the call at 1 o'clock, along with Frank Niepold, who will be here at TERP as being participating in the review camp. So
great.
We'll have him as part of the conversation, which will be good. Okay, well, thanks a lot, everybody, and we'll talk again next week.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Bye.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Bye.